Hi, everyone, and welcome to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh.
And I'm Lizzie.
And if this is your first time listening, we're a medical...
sort of.
...podcast where we try to discuss medicine and health in a relatable way.
And we will answer questions you may not feel comfortable asking your doctor and definitely won't bring up to your friends.
On today's show, we have Stephen Burrows. His new HBO documentary, Bleed Out, is an investigation into the American healthcare system, malpractice, hospital politics, and insurance coverage, or the lack thereof. Stay tuned.
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns.
And welcome back to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Joe.
Hey, guys. How are we?
Hey.
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 Hey yourself. Hey, Joe. What's happening, buddy?
It's good to be here.
Yeah, we missed you last time.
Missed the last episode or two, at least being present. So it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to see your face right across from me.
I do want to know about, actually, I'm not sure if you're prepared to talk about it, your doctor experience, where you had like sort of a...
I guess we're cutting that.
Yeah. Doctor experience? Well, you know, yeah. Explain. Yeah. What do you mean?
You told me. You explain.
which one?
Well, you and I were just talking about it a week or two ago.
You mean
about
my acid reflux? Or
it's not your medical problems, which we can go into, in your reflux and your herpes if you want. But
just, for the record, I do not have herpes, ladies and gentlemen. But
of the mouth.
Of the mouth.
No, it was just like
of the nipples. These herpes of the nipples.
Yes. I did have a patient who had like sort of a perineal, which is sort of like around the, you know, vagina anus area of the herpes of that area. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I should tell Joe.
Sorry, Joe. Joe does not have herpes for the listener. Sorry.
No. No, but your personal interaction, not your medical experience as a, like with disease, just you were telling me how you had this conversation with your doctor and it didn't go sort of exactly as you had expected and you were frustrated.
God,
that's
I don't
okay.
remember this.
Yeah, I mean, it's your...
You sure you're talking to me?
No. I think we're keeping this. I think it's your body, dude.
Oh, yeah, this stays in. I have something.
Yeah.
So recently I was...
Wait, do you remember before you start?
Actually, I have something and I remember... So I was recently asked to go talk to some kids in high school to a pre-medical like club, pre-medicine club, about being a doctor, about like my job, etc. It's up in the school was up in Marin County. And for those of you guys who aren't in the Bay Area, Marin County is a very affluent, very nice area just north of San Francisco. It's beautiful. The school was amazing. It looked like something out of a movie. It was nicer than most college campuses. And so I'm walking, actually this is not the actual story, but as I'm walking to give this talk, like I'm walking through like the school with all like the students milling about, and I overhear like these two students talking about how their friend drove like a Jaguar to school that day. I was like, oh my God. And granted, I think even for them that was a bit much, but I'm like, the concept that that's even a possibility, that someone drove a Jaguar to school, is so beyond me. Like when I, Joe, do you remember when I got my car in high school? It was your bottom of the line Honda Civic, 2-door, but I got so much shit from my friends because it was new and I didn't get a used car, and I had to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't know, I don't know, my parents got me a car, I'm so sorry. I took so much crap. Like
I think I was one of those people giving you crap.
Of course you were. But like those people, like they drive, like the concept of driving a Jaguar to school is crazy to me.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's crazy.
So I had to like give this talk in front of like these students, and I'm pretty sure I inadvertently discouraged all of them from going into medicine.
Why?
Well, so first of all, I mean, they had that like look, that broken look, like that blank high school, I work at Chuck E. Cheese look. Like they're at their lunchtime. They should be like out having fun and playing. And here's this guy that's talking to them instead when they'd rather be doing like a billion other things. So like, it already started off like on a kind of a bad note. And then they would ask questions about like, how much schooling did you go through? And, you know, I told them I went through a lot of like training, a lot of school, then a lot of training. And I just saw their, like, I saw there was crestfallen. Right. I saw in their eyes, their souls breaking. Right. Their hearts, I heard one of them like break.
Yeah, and the glass like glazed over their eyes, and the vacancy is just, that's the problem with that whole thing is if you say it's an 8-year, 10-year, 15-year endeavor, it's a huge turnoff. Like, I feel like the only way that I got through it and that many is that you just think about it one step at a time. Like, you just think about it as, oh, I like science. I want to go to med school. Cool. Then you don't think about the fact that after 4 years, you're going to have to do some more training or go into, you can go into business, you can go into consulting, you can go into pharmacy, you know, or pharmaceutical industry. But yeah, that's how I did it, because I was never sure exactly what I wanted. I wasn't sure if I wanted to do surgery or medicine. So it was step by step. And then, you know, then there are those kids who know they want to do plastic surgery and they know they're about to embark on a 10 to 15 year endeavor. But yeah, you ruined these kids' lives.
I think I did. There was a couple of them that were really eager. Shout out to Madison. Seemed like they're going to be really like into it, and they're like, they know what they're getting into and all that. And I tried not to be too Pollyanna-esque about it, but I was like, you know, it's not all bad. It's really like, there's good moments, you know, there's like, it's fun. And but they're like, so you lose your 20s? I'm like, yeah, sometimes your 30s too.
You're like, lose is a strong word. I just don't know where they went. I think I'll find them at some point. Right. Maybe when I get my brand new Jaguar.
Jaguar?
I think I will relive my 20s when I turn 50. And the thing is that the interesting thing about Marin, and I don't mean to stereotype, but I'm sure half the kids' parents are doctors.
I asked them that, and that was about it. That was about like a 50-50 breakdown. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not judging. It's just, this is like wealthy suburbia, you know? It's not like $20 million pads in San Francisco or Manhattan, but this is like upper middle class. This is what happens, you know? So I can't imagine these kids, they just have never asked their parents or care.
Right.
Like, kids don't care about what their parents do or how they got to where they are. They're just, you know, got their Jaguar.
Yeah. So if anyone's looking for a motivational speaker out there, I'm your guy.
Well, was it fun to talk to them?
Destroying,
crushing their souls and not feel as good as you had anticipated?
Yeah, surprisingly, not as much fun as I expected. No, they were great. I mean, they're totally cool. And they are much more organized than I was as a high school student. So, and Joe can attest to that.
Yeah.
Anyways, coming up next, we have a great interview. We have Stephen Burrows. He is a comedian, filmmaker, actor, writer, director, and his new documentary on HBO, Bleed Out, sort of chronicles an investigation into the Byzantine network and labyrinthine, like,
yeah, those are big words.
I did well on the SAT.
I like it.
System, healthcare system in America. Stay tuned. Our next guest is an actor, writer, director of comedies like Chump Change, and you've seen him in Spy Hard and other movies. His mother underwent a surgery and a hospitalization in 2009, and it left her in a coma with resulting brain damage. The video chronicling of this, of the next 10 years, became the HBO documentary Bleed Out.
Thank you so much for coming on. Tell us like how you started documenting, and because you said initially in the movie, it wasn't your purpose was to document it and create this movie. So how did you even start to do that?
Well, that's correct. I have to say that starting this whole thing, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just trying to like get care for my mother. She had, like you said, she had fallen riding her bike and she broke her hip, and she had this hip surgery. Very standard routine hip surgery, and it never really took for some reason. For about a period of 5 months, she was hobbling around, and I kept going back. She lives in Milwaukee. I live in California. Every month I would go back, and I'd talk to the doctor, take her in, say, she can't even lay down in her bed. You know, this is not really working. And he kept saying, well, you know, it's healing. We'll just keep going, keep doing therapy, keep doing aerobics and water therapy. And she did everything as she was told, and she inevitably fell. She fell again. And the first thing that happened was she went to the emergency room, on this second fall, and the ER guy did not see anything wrong, and he was going to send her home. And my mom was with a friend. And this is one of the great lessons I've learned in this whole experience is you really have to have an advocate, mm-hmm. no matter what your experience is, whoever you are. And my mom's best friend said, no, she's on heavy painkillers. She doesn't know what's going on. You cannot release her. She lives alone. And my mom's best friend forced an admittance into the hospital. And this is where it starts to get nutty. My mom, and you two know probably better than anybody that, you know, people, they want these patients in and out and in 3 days in general, unless there's a mitigating circumstances. And my mom was in this hospital for 8 days, just laying there on heavy painkillers, Dilaudid, morphine. And I kept calling the doctor every day and the nurses long distance saying, what's going on? What's the plan of care? Well, you know, the surgeon's waiting for the primary's waiting for the surgeon. And this went on for 8 days. So I got on a plane and to find out what is going on, because my mom could not even speak. She was in so much pain. She's just laying there. So I went in on day 8 and I called the doctor, who, by the way, the surgeon was a family friend of ours. He had done my mom's knees. He had done the first hip. And I called him. I said, I'm here in Milwaukee. What's going on? And he's like, oh, my God. OK, yeah, OK, let's do it. And he decides that he wants to rush her into surgery. And she's still on Plavix. Tons of people are on Plavix. It's a blood thinner. It's a standard drug for a lot of folks. But I did know that, you know, you kind of want to be off this stuff for elective surgery. Even Plavix says 5 to 7 days. So I asked the doctor, I said, well, what about the Plavix? He said, I never had a problem with Plavix. I feel so bad. Your mom's been in here for 8 days. Let's just do this thing. And as you saw from the film, I have an uncle who's a doctor and an aunt who's a nurse. And they said, Steve, you know, you got to get her off the Plavix. And I said, I told them, you know, I said it. And in fact, one of the nurses wrote a note. She said she forced the doctor to write in his own handwriting, I'm aware patient on Plavix may cause bleeding. He had no concerns about it. So he takes her to this surgery, says it's going to be about 2 hours, and it goes 6. And then we find out that she lost over half the blood volume in her body. She lost over 2,500 cc's. And a lot of that happened in the first 45 minutes because they did one cut and they did another cut. And as it turns out, we didn't know this at the time, but there was only a nurse there. There was no doctor there in the ICU that night. That doctor had been replaced by this camera doctor out by the airport in Milwaukee. Monitoring patients on cameras that are theoretically, you know, monitoring patients. And we didn't even know anything about this. We in fact, this hospital unit, this ICU, my mom, it was 2 days before they discovered that she was in a coma. And the person who found her, she was in a coma, was me. What do I know? I just know she wasn't waking up. The day before, the doctor told me she's just foggy and groggy from anesthesia. She's fine. Hey, I heard you were on Seinfeld and I heard you made a movie and there was all this chit chat. And I said, right. Yeah, well, why is my mom not, you know, up? She was no concern, as you saw in the film, no concern at all about why my mom wasn't waking up. So then I get into a fight with this ICU doctor on the second day in the ICU because my red flag went up. I had this internal red flag. I don't know anything about any of this, but I knew my mother was in trouble.
You know your mom, you know what she's like normally, and this is not anywhere close to it.
Correct. She looked dead to me. And I demanded that somebody do something, and they called in a neurologist. The neurologist came in, and he said, look, your mom's in a vegetative state. We hope she wakes up. She might not.
Wow.
And that's really what began this whole thing. And at that point, I started asking a lot of questions. My aunt and uncle, I had an advantage of having a doctor and a nurse giving me really smart questions to ask, and these questions were not being answered properly. So my uncle – To back to your very first question, how this all started, my uncle had me get the medical records, and he saw the anesthesia records in particular during surgery and this catastrophic massive blood loss in surgery. But my mom's blood pressures were perfect for 6 hours. They were handwritten anesthesia notes, 120 over 80, perfect 6 hour, no blood, no drops at all. And I also learned, the heart rate and the pulse rate and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There were no fluctuations at all with any of that stuff. So my uncle, within 10 seconds of looking at this handwritten anesthesia note, told me this thing is, he thought it was falsified. And we later found out that the reason she wasn't waking up and that she was in a coma was it was massive loss of blood due to loss of oxygen to the brain, due to, they call it, you'll know this, hypoxic encephalopathy. Mm-hmm. So she didn't stroke. There was no stroke. It was massive loss of oxygen to the brain, yeah. Especially in the front. And that's why she lost all of her, you know, all use of her legs and that kind of stuff too. So it was my uncle who said, you know, you got to get the medical records before they change them again. You got to get an attorney and you got to become a power of attorney. And that's what set me off.
So it's interesting. You talk about advocacy and we agree that is super important, even for doctors and for us, when we go in and we have family members, we have to advocate for them sometimes. So totally think that's an important concept. What's really interesting in this story is, well, there's lots of really interesting parts of the story, but one of them is that your uncle is a doctor. And at first he's pushing you to do this. He's pushing for you to be the advocate and to take sort of legal measures. But then at some point, his attitude on it seems to shift and he seems to want to not be involved. That's something I still don't entirely understand. What happened at that point that he stopped having an interest in you pushing the case or being involved?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. Is it because he's a doctor and his friends like peer pressured or bullied him? Like, you're a doctor, you can't go after doctors.
Well, you know, I'm in a unique situation talking to two doctors right now. I've never actually had the chance to ask you guys. I will answer that question. However, this is one of the biggest questions that everybody has after they see this film. But I've never had a chance to talk to two doctors. Everything in the film is, of course, true. It's been, everything's vetted. Everything was, you know, all under oath testimony, everything. But based on what you saw, do you have, what's your best guess on what you think happened there with my uncle?
Yes.
Because my uncle was, he was all in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then he was on
driving.
The fence.
He was sort of pushing you to do this.
Oh no, yeah. he was the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
Right. There's two things I think that maybe I don't think that Aurora Health Institute hired people to bully him. I don't know. That's like that would be a fun fiction movie, right? With like the Untouchables, like with, you know, with the mafia. But I do think that maybe his colleagues or his peers were like, this makes doctors look bad and you're a doctor and you need to, it's like a fraternity. You need to be with us or against us, or, you know, this, I guess I'm judging you, but this consumed your life. And maybe he thought it was in your interest to knock it off, you know, because this was really all consuming. And maybe he saw that it wasn't necessarily helping your mother and it was maybe hurting you and your personal life. I don't know.
I think that is probably, that's probably my guess too. I don't think that there is any peer pressure to not push this. I think amongst doctors, if we all saw what was presented in the film, I think if we heard that same story, we would all be like, oh my God, that's awful. I think that's pretty universal. But my only guess was that he was like, he sensed that the case wasn't going to be won for whatever reason. And he didn't want to, it was causing him emotional stress to be a part of that, and he didn't want you to go through the emotional stress. That's my only guess as to why.
This is just my opinion. I personally think that so much time had passed because it was a long thing. He saw that my mom was not getting better. He saw that, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money. It's
yeah.
A lot of time. It's certainly taken over
your life.
My life.
Yeah.
And by the way, his wife, my aunt, she stayed in the case the whole way. Ted just got cold feet.
Yeah. Hey, Steven, this is amazing to hear. And I just can't believe that you guys lost the case. I'm hearing the story. We're not lawyers, obviously, but just
join the club.
Just the fact that they, you know, they did the surgery with this Plavix medication, which was wrong. But even beyond that, like, how did the doctors not know she was in a coma? Why did you have to discover that? You know, why wasn't she really being watched? These things, this is, to me as a patient, is way beyond negligent. This is like so black and white. Like, I just so surprised. Why do you think the case went the way it did? Or are you able to answer
that's
that?
That's like a super tough question,
yeah.
Joe.
I think that's sort of the thing of the basic premise of the movie,
right?
Is why are things this fucked up?
Well, this is
right.
I mean,
right.
I'll just, I won't answer for you obviously because I don't know, but But this is what we talk about in medicine a lot, something called continuity of care, and what we see in the movie about like accountability and responsibility. And at the end, you talk to the Mayo Clinic and try to sort of hear the gold standard of what medicine should be. Everyone has heard of, or I've heard of, the Mayo Clinic. That's always the part, you know, a patient comes out of the OR. And by the way, even before that, there should have been a conversation with the primary care doctor and the surgeon about Plavix. Is it safe to stop? Is it not safe? They go to the ICU. There's nurses and doctors and ICU doctors and, you know, and the surgeons. There needs to be we call it an interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary approach to a patient, right? And, oh, I knew her yesterday and she was awake and talking and vibrant, and today she's not. Let's discuss why there's a change. And it seemed like there are so many steps in your mother's story where that didn't happen, right?
I mean, you nailed it. I think that in one of the most frustrating things, and to get to Joe's point as well, is, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around, you know, the pre-surgery, surgery, the transfer, ICU, EICU. But the one thing that I've seen now through the, especially going through the entire legal case as well, is that continuity of care did not exist. The bottom line in my mom's case was I kept asking the same question over the years and even at trial, is like, who is in charge of my mom's care?
Right. Who's quarterbacking this thing?
Right.
Who's the captain of the ship? Who is the person who is ultimately responsible and accountable for my mother? And as we show in the film, I was fortunate enough to videotape the under oath depositions. And there was no, you know, we had five doctors and one nurse, and there was nobody, none of their lawyers and none of the doctors or nurses ever, there was no question. Everyone agreed that there was massive loss of blood, right, in surgery. And everyone agreed they had nothing to do with it. I mean, there was an incredible, right. I was warned about this from our first attorney. When the going gets tough, you know, we all know right and wrong. We all know, you guys are doctors. You know, doctors are heroes. They are incredible. You guys are saving lives every day. Nurses, doctors, there's incredible medical people out there in the world. The question is, you know, you're human as well. You're like the rest of us. And when something goes wrong, what do we do?
I want to ask you a specific question about that. Through all this experience, and in the movie, it kind of shows you, it's like you talk to one doctor, he says something about the other doctor. You talk to another doctor, they blame someone else. If at any point someone had come forward, say the surgeon, say the anesthesiologist, and said, we fucked up and we're so sorry, would that have changed anything? Do you think honestly that you would have said, all right, I get it, that happens? What would have been different had that occurred?
That's a great question. First off, I had no idea it was going to go 10 years. I had no idea my mom was going to survive, you know, back in the day. And I do want to circle back at some point to Joe's thing about not knowing my mom in a coma for 2 days, because that still sticks with me.
Right.
I don't have a good answer for that.
Right.
How do you not notice that a woman's in a coma? You know, Dr. McCary, he's the Johns Hopkins doctor in our film as well, in Mayo Clinic. Their philosophy is pretty simple: accountability, transparency, and apology. And I really believe this because, you know, I had better things to do.
Yeah.
Or I thought I had better things to do. I had a great career going in comedy. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to make this movie. I didn't want to have to take care of my mother for 10 years. You know, she's cognitively and physically disabled, but her life was destroyed.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that I stuck with this is because I never got that apology. I never got any transparency or accountability. Yeah. To this day, I still don't really know what happened in that surgery. I still don't really know what happened in that ICU or that EICU because they haven't told me. They fought 7 years to not tell me. And I believe that if a doctor, let's say Dr. Bauer, right out of the gate, you know, my mom's surgeon, our family friend, came out and looked us right in the eye and said, look, I blew it. I should have taken her off the Plavix. We should have had more blood. I should have gone up there to the ICU and talked to the doctor up there, which he did not, right? I should have told him, hey, we just lost half the blood in this woman's body. So you should know that you have a critical patient here. Where's the doctor? And the doctor, there wouldn't have been a doctor there. And the nurse would have said, there's no doctor here. Well, get a doctor in here.
Yeah.
We need a physical doctor here. And that was still, my mom still had a fighting shot at that point. you know, when she went up to that ICU. And I always believe that if they would have come clean, just been straight and honest and accountable and transparent, and like, these aren't bullet points for me. These are like, if you would have just told me the truth in a search for the truth, if you would have just told me the truth 10 years ago.
Yeah. Right. The whole thing started because you wanted the truth, right? So then
you're clearly not, at no point in the film are we thinking, oh, this guy's in it for the money. You're looking for an answer. There's this diffusion of responsibility out there. You're trying to figure out what happened. That makes a lot of sense.
By the way, there is no money.
Right.
A lot of people think like, oh, there's all these frivolous medical malpractice lawsuits. That is not the case.
Yeah.
You can't even get a lawyer. Lawyers will only take the very best medical malpractice cases. And we happen to be one of those cases. And historically, nationally, not just in Wisconsin, they lose 90% of the cases.
Yeah.
So why are you, if you're a lawyer, for instance, for medical malpractice lawyer, why are you going to take a case, work free for 7 years, and then lose?
Right.
Yeah, I got a question about that specifically, actually. For you doctors, Lizzie and Kaveh, do you think...
And Steven.
And Steven's
go
not...
On.
Steven's not...
Yeah. I know.
Do you think...
I'm the furthest thing from a doctor.
You're the furthest thing from a lawyer. You're a comedy writer.
That's true. Hey. That's true, yeah.
Hey. Like with the Mayo Clinic being so transparent, which is great, I applaud them. Do you think doctors in general are maybe... reluctant to give out that information to fall on the sword, so to speak, because of the legal ramifications of getting in trouble, getting fired.
Sure. There's a lot of factors that would make a doctor afraid to share a mistake like that. There's the legal aspect. They're afraid they're opening themselves up to a lawsuit if they do that. There is a pride aspect. There is an embarrassment aspect. All those things, I'm sure, play into something like that. So, you know, and they're... It's only human. I mean, if you screw up at work, you know, it's hard to, you're different because you're kind of a really open dude and you're like honest and earnest and you will say it. But if there's lives at risk on it too, it's another component to that as well.
We were definitely taught. And again, we had these actors come in when we were med students and they would give you these case scenarios. And there was one where there was an error and the take home point. Like the case went on, the actor went on and on and on and didn't let you free from this mock scenario until you apologized. So like we were absolutely encouraged. And I think there have been studies done that show if there's a medical error, if you apologize, there's fewer lawsuits, there's fewer bad, you know, fights. And again, I can't remember the hard outcomes, but
you are correct. It's actually cheaper to apologize because the family, you'll take the gasoline that you're pouring on the family's fire.
Right. You don't light it. Right.
We all know what it's like when someone burns us. And, you know, like I had a friend recently who made a mistake and I was really upset with him. And I had worked out this whole speech when I was going to see him, you know, this whole, you know, I was going to get, I had it all worked out. You did this and you did this and how dare you did this. And he came up to me and he said, Steve, before you say anything, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
And it took the wind right out of me. And of course I had to give him a hug and I love him. and life went on and we learned from it. So I think, I mean, everything you guys just said about, you know, this type of, when something goes wrong, what do? And the reasons why a doctor may not want you, all those reasons you gave are all very strong reasons and human reasons.
Yeah. I have a question. So, you know, a lot of the bad experience and the bad outcome occurred either in the OR, let's say, probably, and then in this electronic ICU, this EICU, right, where there was a monitor, a computer, a video camera watching her and sending the image and the vital signs to someone several miles away. So we talk a lot on this show, or we have intermittently, about artificial intelligence and how... And that's the future of everything, really, right? Including medicine. So do you feel like you've lost complete faith in that concept, in this telemedicine or EICU? Or do you, like, are you totally just over it? You don't even want to hear about it. You see no role because you've had such this awful personal experience. Or do you feel like there could be a way that that could work in the future? Because, again, I think it's here and I think it's staying for probably forever.
Yeah. That's a really great question, and I've never even thought of it until you've asked it. I would say, honestly, there's a place for it. You know, I can see, I mean, I've had you know, years ago I broke my collarbone, and somehow I went to this urgent care, and they had a radiologist in India look at it, you know, and he diagnosed it, right? And I said, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, they sent him a picture, and this guy's over in New Delhi or something. I thought, that's cool. But then with my experience with my mom, and, you know, her not waking up for 2 days in an intensive care unit, someone's going to have to tell me how that technology was good for her.
Right.
Because I didn't see it. And, you know, they tout it as cutting edge technology. If you, you know, the slightest changes of any type of vital signs or whatever. Well, in this case, they didn't even notice it until I threw a fit, favorable to them. And this nurse gets up, and we wanted this woman on our jury. We wanted this person. And she said, well, I believe that technology is just awesome. However, it does not replace the bedside doctor. It does not replace the human touch. You cannot assess and manage a critical care patient by way of a camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was immediately rejected by the defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But I hope that kind of answers your question, because I think it's a mix.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to take advantage of this great technology, but still, you want hands-on. You know, if there would have been a doctor there in that ICU, I think that we might not be here talking about this today.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we'll have to discuss it with our telemedicine friends. We've had people come on to talk about it. I would love for them to see this movie too and give us their thoughts. I have two more questions for you before we let you go. The first one is how your mom is. I want to know how your mom is doing now. And then the next one is, how do you feel about doctors now? Do you find yourself, have you lost faith in medicine to be in general?
Don't pretend we're not here and answer the question.
I'm sorry?
Pretend Kaveh and I are not here and you're talking to Joe.
I am absolutely thrilled, actually, to be talking to two doctors. It's thrilling for me that you guys, it's one of the great surprises of this film, because I made this movie as a, you know, some people thought it was going to be like this anti-doctor, anti-medicine film. I'm like, no, this is a pro-doctor, pro-medicine movie. You know, I respect so much what you do. My opinion on doctors hasn't changed at all. I still trust doctors. I still blindly trust doctors. And, you know, I'm a guy who probably should not.
Right. Right.
But, you know, when I got a kidney stone, I don't go into the emergency room going, hey, I'd like to see your medical diploma, please.
Right.
You know, I say, please stop the pain. Can you help me?
Yeah.
And now I have a more than most, I have a much fuller appreciation for the situation that you, the doctors, are in, you know, and that I now understand that you guys work for, a system of some kind or a group, and you guys have insurers. And there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of cogs in the wheel, and you guys are human. And I really believe that you are all doing the very best you can, because you guys went to school and you guys know, you know. I just don't think that I no longer believe that doctors are God. Right. I used to believe that was, you know, that you guys know everything. And now I realize, we're entitled to ask questions. And in fact, our questions to you folks might actually give us better care, because you're going to have to think maybe a little harder and maybe consult a little bit.
Yeah.
But weirdly enough, my respect for doctors has increased, and my respect continues to grow for, you know, people like yourself who have made your life's mission to help others and to keep us healthy. And the question really is, it always comes down to me, what do you do when you make a mistake? What's going to happen?
Right.
But I still have faith in the system, but I think it could be a lot better. And that's, I've already seen, like, you know, just talking to you guys, the fact that you responded to the film and would even want to talk to a guy like me is a big step in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. It's great. And I assume it's definitely, it's gotta be one of a kind, you know. Nobody can have documented almost 10 years worth of all those experiences, encounters, good, bad, and going through the colossal amount of paperwork. And it really also just speaks to the underlying theme is healthcare reform. I mean, it just seemed so complicated and difficult for you. So we really appreciate you sharing your story.
I would just give you a little bit of good news too. One of the other great things that's come out of this horrible experience is I got to make this film, and thank God for HBO, and they got behind it early. But we've heard, just that the movie's only two months old, and my wife and I, just in our house here, you know, have heard from thousands and thousands of people.
Good.
Emails, calls, letters, and a very large percentage of those are doctors and nurses and hospitals. And one of the biggest surprises here, we've been contacted by dozens and dozens of universities,
yeah,
and medical schools and law schools who want to make this film. Like, this is a shock to me. I finished this movie 2 hours before its first screening. I was just trying to finish it.
Wow.
And now we're getting, you know, university and medical schools, they want to use this as part of their curriculum.
Yeah.
As a teaching tool to show, all right, this is kind of how it shouldn't go and how it went for this family. And that's one of the most encouraging things for me is the response from the medical community, that they see this as an opportunity this is going to help them give people better care and help them become better doctors and nurses, etc. Yeah. And just to answer my mom is not in good shape. She's still alive. She's on long-term hospice, very comfortable. She's at a great facility. But she's like unable really to speak. And, you know, she has to have everything done for her at this point. Well, I'm going to see her actually tomorrow. We're going to Milwaukee tomorrow to check in on her. I haven't seen her in a couple months since Christmas. So,
yeah.
She's still alive, very comfortable, but she's not doing well.
Well, it's such a tough story, and you're right. It is so important for people in the medical profession to watch it, and it's tough for us to watch. By the way, it's tough for I think anyone to watch to some degree, but particularly for doctors. That being said, I think you did an amazing job with the film in that it covers some really heavy topics, but you do it in a very calm, not overly depressing way. And I'm not sure how. That must be your comedy background, but it's easier to watch than you would think from the description of it. And it's a great film. We highly recommend it. It's called Bleed Out. It's on HBO right now. Is there anything else you want to plug?
It's on HBO now, or HBO now. And it's actually literally on HBO, a thing called HBO Now and HBO Go.
Right.
Two streaming things. It's also available on all of HBO's partner streaming, Amazon Prime, Hulu. It's out there. And, you know, people can just go to HBO.com and put in Bleed Out, and there we are.
Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for coming on. It was really great to talk to you, and thank you for sharing your story with us and with the world.
I really appreciate this time, especially from two doctors like yourself and Joe.
And Joe, thank you. Thank you for recognizing Joe, and thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
All anecdotes and patient-related details have been changed with respect to date, sex, and certain details so that patient identification is not possible.